Are these the kinds of memories that Vietnam vets call flashbacks? I don't know. I snap back to the present after this brief temporal displacement. I'm sitting on a tree stump in Texas, two television cameras in my face, while a producer interviews me. After the Army, I became an investigative journalist focusing on special operations and the intelligence community. So I've done plenty of TV news spots over the years covering desperate firefights from Benghazi to Niger. This is the first time I've ever done an actual television show. "Did you return fire?" the producer asks. His name is Chris. He has a short beard, his daughter's name is tattooed on his neck, and he seems like the type of dude who never runs out of energy. A great trait to have in this line of work. I pause at this question, too, as I recall the entire world coming down on top of me on a lonely mountainside in Afghanistan. It brings up a conflicted and confused churn of emotions. I can tell you that feeling lonely in a firefight can't even begin to compare to the loneliness that comes from taking responsibility for the decisions you've made in combat. In the end, you walk that road alone. Yeah, I returned fire. I'm 34 years old. When a good friend and fellow Special Forces veteran, Jim West, finally convinced me to go talk to someone at Veterans Affairs, the psychologist asked me if I ever felt older than I really was. I said it wasn't that so much, as it was that I never felt young in the first place. The stories I could tell, the stories of so many young men of my generation of soldiers could tell, if only anyone would believe them. You may have heard of Murphy's Law, which states that anything that can go wrong will go wrong. With my last name, I kind of stood out among some of my peers. You know, you might be in trouble when a dude named Murphy is on your team. I had rejected the notion of writing a book about myself for a long time. It seemed like kind of a douchey thing to do. I mean, who am I, really? I've written hundreds of articles, interviewed countless people, written about mass graves in the Philippines and dirty wars in Syria, and dodged IEDs while reporting on the ground in Iraq. Sitting in a crappy Mexican restaurant in Manhattan one day, I told Jim that I felt as if I've written everyone else's story except mine. "You're avoiding it," Jim told me. "That's because of PTSD. You don't want to confront what you've been through." But tonight, during the interview, I'm in Texas, not Manhattan, not Afghanistan. I look right into the camera and tell the world that I've been fired upon and that I've returned fire in combat. Writing about the combat experiences of our soldiers and our allies has been an honor and a privilege. But I now understand that it has also been a way for me to selfishly gain some leverage against the horrible experiences of war. It has been my way to try to understand combat, to conquer it. Deep down, I know there is no taming that beast. But I'm intoxicated by the horrible reality of war, and always have been. And so, yes, I've told everyone's story but mine, until now. Chapter 1. No plan survives first contact with the enemy. Some of my earliest memories are of watching the Gulf War on television. I was 7 years old, staring at CNN on the screen. News coverage was nowhere near as comprehensive or instantaneous as it is today. CNN would just play the same clip of an American soldier bounding forward, filmed through a night vision scope with tracer fire skipping overhead. For all I knew, it could have been training footage and they ran it because it was the only action shot they had of the war. It didn't matter. I was hypnotized by the images on screen. Years later, the Harrison Ford movie, Patriot Games, came out on video. I was watching it with my mom. There's a scene in the movie where the SAS launches a surprise attack against a terrorist camp in the desert. As a kid, I struggled to understand what I was watching. This wasn't a war, not really. It wasn't like the old movies I had seen about World War II. I expressed this confusion to my mom. What was this if not a war? "Secret mission," my mom replied. "Really? Can they do that?" "Of course they can." My mom was no doubt aware of things that had appeared in the press over the last few decades, from the Church Committee hearings to Iran-Contra, but this was all new and exciting information to me. Secret missions? Holy shit, I was sold. I grew up in a house that was over 100 years old, near Beekman Avenue in what was then North Tarrytown, New York. My mom worked as a waitress, and my dad was a carpenter, electrician, plumber, pretty much whatever was needed. While my dad worked to fix up our new house in North Tarrytown, after we moved out of Irvington, where we lived that first year after I was born, my mom kept me in a basket in the living room with a space heater. I have scattered memories of this time, as I was very young. I do recall when my dad installed the new cabinets in the kitchen, and when he lifted the big stone slab in the front yard with a pry bar, and we found a huge brick-lined well underneath. I recall my parents coming home with my little sister, and I recall holding her in my arms all those years back. Sadly, this was not to be our childhood, as my father was diagnosed with lung cancer and died when I was 7 and my sister was 3. Meanwhile, my mother came